Turn your Bible to John, the 20th chapter. I'll begin reading from verse 1 and 2 and then drop down to verse 11. Hear the Easter story through the eyes of the Apostle John. Early in the morning of the first day of the week, while it was still dark, Mary Magdalene came to the tomb and saw that the stone had been taken away from the tomb. She ran to Simon Peter and the other disciple, the one whom Jesus loved, and said, "They have taken the Lord from the tomb, and we don't know where they've put him." Verse 11. Mary stood outside near the tomb, crying. As she cried, she bent down to look into the tomb, and she saw two angels dressed in white, seated where the body of Jesus had been, one at the head and the other at the foot. The angels asked her, "Woman, why are you crying?" She replied, "They have taken away my Lord, and I don't know where they've put him." As soon as she said this, she turned around and she saw Jesus standing there, but she didn't know it was Jesus. Jesus said to her, "Woman, why are you crying? Who are you looking for?" Thinking he was the gardener, she replied, "Sir, if you have carried him away, please tell me where you've put him. I'll go get him." And Jesus said to her, "Mary." She turned around and she said to him in Aramaic, "Rabboni," which means teacher. Jesus said to her, "Don't hold on to me, for I haven't yet gone to my Father. Go to my brothers and sisters and tell them, I'm going up to my Father and your Father, to my God and to your God." And so Mary Magdalene left and announced to the disciples, "I have seen the Lord." Then she told them what he had said to her. Here ends the reading of God's holy word. Praise be to God. Would you pray with me? God, your Son declared himself to be the resurrection and the life. Please give to us now a sense of the presence of the one who is alive forevermore. May the words of my lips and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable and pleasing in your sight, O Lord, our rock and our blessed Redeemer. Amen. Sensitive question to give you right away. Don't blurt out your answer, embarrass yourself around others, just keep it to yourself. But like when you get a new book, do you read the last chapter first and then go back and read the whole book? Are you one of those people? I mean, some people really want to know the end of the story before they look at the whole story so they can kind of get more out of the story. Easter's kind of like that, isn't it? I mean, you know what happened today. You've been around. The problem is it can kind of become routine, and you know, attend a service like this, then go over to Aunt Sheila's and have some baked ham, and go home and get ready for work the next day, and then be standing around the company Keurig. Roger will come up with his coffee cup and say, "Well, how was your Easter?" "Good. Kind of routine." There's nothing routine about Easter. Do you know what Easter is about? It's about your death. It's about your last day. The story and its familiarity can lose the horror of the week. It's a horrible week. You see the worst of humanity in every possible way that we can be rotten. Beginning with sort of the sham of the parade, the sort of pathetic parade that took place on Sunday where the crowd is cheering for Jesus. The reason they're cheering for Jesus is because they think he's going to lead an army that's going to overthrow the Romans so that they don't have to deal with those oppressive people anymore. But when they find out that Jesus isn't going to do that for them, within 4 days, they are standing in a crowd saying, "Crucify him, crucify him." Really, Thursday and Friday are owned by the evil of this world. Judas is going to betray Jesus. Peter is going to deny he even knows who Jesus is. All the male disciples are going to flee for trying to save their lives. The only ones that are going to have the guts to hang around are the women who are going to stand at the cross and they're going to watch Jesus die. It's a horrible week. I just finished up reading this book by Carl Marlantes, What It's Like to Go to War. He was a captain in the Marine Corps, infantry marine, on the border between Vietnam and Laos. He went on to graduate from Yale. He was an Oxford Rhodes Scholar. He's a brilliant guy. And just a couple years ago, he sat down, he reflected on his experiences and everything he's kind of learned about philosophy, theology. He's trying to blend the two together and just talk about that experience, that transformative, life-changing, world-changing experience that he went through. And he said, really, you can boil evil down to three things. And he uses kind of unusual titles. I'm not sure I understand why. He says they're white heat evil, red heat evil, and fallen standard evil. White heat atrocity, red heat atrocity, fallen standard atrocity. He says white heat atrocity evil is a logical evil that is devoid of empathy, of emotion. It's just a calculated evil. Really isn't connecting into the people that are being affected by that evil. It's just something that someone has decided this needs to be done and it's going to be done. And that's what the religious leaders are doing here. The religious leaders have decided this Jesus has got to go. And they have come up with a plan. Now, they themselves don't have the ability to put Jesus to death, but they know who does, and that's Pilate. And they know what buttons to push on Pilate because Pilate's got a call from the head office in Rome, said, Pilate, if there's one more bloody uprising in Judea, you won't be able to get a job as a dog catcher in North Africa. Keep the peace. That's why that crowd is so significant in the story. They're scaring Pilate, and that's the second kind of evil. It's an emotional evil. It's just, ah! It's more, it's the guy that finds his wife of 25 years in bed with the Schwanz guy, you know? Ah! Pilate's scared. He's not thinking things through logically. He just knows he doesn't want to be a dog catcher. So, although he has the power to spare Jesus' life, although his wife is telling him, don't do anything about this Jesus, this guy's the real deal, he does it anyway because he doesn't want to lose his job. You ever do that? You ever compromise your values? Which is kind of the third kind of evil. It's the one where we present ourselves to our family, we present ourselves in church as one kind of person, believing a certain thing, but get us in the wrong situation. Whether by yourself or around a certain group of people that are heading in the wrong way, and people can do incredibly stupid, even evil things. That's what's going on with a crowd. They're being mules, they're being cows. And the point is that we don't think that it's just those people back then that did this whole thing. Remember Mel Gibson, he did this movie, Passion of the Christ? I mean, it's his opus. I mean, it's the greatest thing he's ever going to do in his life. And he's written it. It's the last 12 hours of Jesus' life. He writes it. He produces it. He directs it. But he's not in it. You ever notice that? He's not in the movie. He's in there one time. You don't see all of him. You just see his hands. It's his hands that are nailing the spike into Jesus' hands. He insisted on that. He said to everybody here, it's wrong for us to think that it was the Jews back then that put Jesus to death. We all put Jesus to death. This is on all of us and our collective junk. If you've been involved with a sermon series, one of the things that we talked about is the collective junk of the human race, and that nobody is outside of this. I mean, if you had a christening paraphrase of the Bible, it essentially boils down to this. All of us have crap on our shoes. All of us. The worst thing to do is to act like you don't have crap on your shoes, because then you will drag it into your house. You will drag it through your whole life, and you will wonder, why do things stink around here? You begin to blame everybody else around you, when really, there it is. And Jung says that for those that cannot admit the evil in their own life, that is how the evil below the surface in our own subconscious, it just gets deeper and thicker and heavier. It's in our admission of our own stuff, our confession of our own stuff, that we can begin to find freedom from that. And see, that's part of Easter too. So at the end of Friday, you have this terrible scene where all that's left are the women standing at the foot of the cross, and it says, and Jesus gave up his spirit. Have you ever been there when that happens? Whether it's an animal or a person, when they take their last breath. That's a holy thing. As Christians, we describe life this way. Spiritus, draw in the Spirit. Sanctus, out goes the life. Spiritus, Sanctus, until one day, out goes the life. We used to have this cat. Doug is his name. And we had adopted Doug from a humane society. I don't know how we got on the track that we needed to have another pet, but we went down to the Humane Society and they had a kitten cage. They had this cage with all these little kittens. And they say, well, you can pick one out. So the worker went over and opened up the little kitten cage. And there was this little black cat way in the back with no tail sitting there. And he saw that door open up. He climbed over everybody's hat and he launched himself out of there. He said, I guess we'll take that one. That's Doug. But I don't know if he really would have launched himself out if he knew he was being adopted into a family of four little girls. My memories of Doug are of Doug in a baby carriage, a little bonnet on his head, sitting there looking at me like, when will you end this humiliation? And I just, if we could talk to each other, I'd say, it's not going to happen, man. This is your lot in life. We had this Sophie, and she just loved pets and constantly would have, like, Doug under one arm. He's hanging there like a limp noodle just thinking, oh, what's going to happen to me next? And she'd have something in her other arm. I remember one time Julia's standing on the bench by our dinner table, and she's not supposed to be standing by the bench. And Doug jumps on the table, and he's not supposed to be on the table. And I say, Julia's about three. And I say, Julia, get that cat off the table. And so she pushes the cat off the table. Unfortunately, her little finger got stuck in his rump. And I hear this, wow! And I look over at Julia, and she's, ah! We didn't see Doug for about 3 days. Everybody was traumatized. It was horrible. It's about 5-6 years into Doug's life, which is pretty young for a cat. He's eating, but he's not gaining any weight. He's getting thinner and thinner. He's got diarrhea. It's just, something's not right. So I went to the vet, and he says, Doug has leukemia. And we couldn't make the decision that day. We knew what we needed to do, but nobody had the guts to do it on that day. But you just watch him be so miserable. And so I went back with Doug, and I'm in the vet's office here in town, and the vet says, do you want to hold Doug? And I'm looking at this stainless steel table, and I'm thinking, well, I don't want him laying on that. So I'm holding Doug, and they get the sodium pentothal out, and they inject him with that, and slowly his body just goes. He's gone. That's going to happen to all of us someday. That last day, sanctus. So for 3 days, Jesus is in the tomb. And it's early in the morning, and there's Mary Magdalene, who I have consistently said should have been the leader of the whole bunch, but everything was so sexist back then that it had to be a guy in charge of it, although Mary's the one that's had the guts the entire time to hang with Jesus, no matter what the cost to herself personally. So she's the one that's rewarded with seeing Jesus, the resurrected Jesus, for the first time. But then Jesus says a really curious thing to her. Jesus says, Mary, don't hold on to me. I have not yet gone to the Father. What does that mean? It's like Jesus is in between. He's in between earth and heaven. I mean, he's leaving earth, but he hasn't actually gone to heaven. He's in between. He's got one foot in both. You want to hear a crazy thing? So do you. You know what amphibians are, right? Amphibians are creatures that are equally at home in the water or on land. And C.S. Lewis says, we human beings are spiritual amphibians, only we're part animal and we're part spirit. We're different than animals. And you've heard all the different things. You know, animals don't have logic, or animals don't have reason. They have no sense of being. C.S. Lewis said, well, animals don't have a sense of humor. I mean, one of the things that we have about ourselves is the comical state of being this eternal being that's stuck in this body. To our knowledge, animals do not have a sense of humor. They do not have a sense of self. We don't have any idea that the daddy prairie dog goes over to the little prairie dog and said, hey, pull my finger. They don't do that. And we do because we have a sense of how ridiculous it is to be. You've never met a mere mortal. If any one of you were to be transformed right now into your eternal state, we would either be tempted to fall down and worship you or to run like heck in the other direction. If we saw you for who you really are, your spirit, you've never met a mere mortal. Jesus himself said in John the 10th chapter, verse 34, Jesus said, isn't it written in your scriptures, I have said you are gods, with a small g? Did you know Jesus said that? We're both. Notice I didn't say you have one foot on earth and the other foot in heaven. Because what's taking place at Calvary, it isn't all rose petals and perfume. It is this violent collision between the accumulated junk and evil of the entire human race colliding with the goodness and the graciousness of God, where God in human flesh is trying to cleave our soul away from the evil that has a hold of us so that we can go and spend eternity with Him. It's a war that's taking place. And Jesus wins this incredible victory so that you and I have a choice. We have an opportunity. I mean, remember back in Luke, the 13th chapter, where Jesus said, strive to enter through the narrow door. For many will try, few will be able to. There will be much weeping and gnashing of teeth, he says, for those that don't enter through this door. The door is faith and trust in him. Remember, Jesus said, I am the door. There's this book by Dr. Maurice Rawlings. You know who he is? He's no lightweight. He was President Eisenhower's personal physician. He's a cardiac surgeon. He was assigned as the primary doctor for the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He's head of the Department of Clinical Medicine at the University of Tennessee. And as a heart surgeon, one of the things that he would see is people that went through a near-death experience. He wrote a book, wrote a number of books, but he wrote a book. And what's really interesting about this book is that he and his colleagues, you've all heard the story of a near-death experience and what happened when people go down through the tunnel, the light, the sense of peace, the calm, the reunion. What he found and what's unique about this study was they did their interviews immediately when people were still just in the recovery room. And a number of people did not have the experience of going up the tunnel of light, the peace, the calm, the reunion. A number of people woke up incredibly agitated and afraid because of what they had experienced in their near-death experience. The best word to describe it was torment. What they experienced was torment. And what happened, he said, what's interesting is that we would do follow-ups and we would contact those people 30 days later, 6 months later, a year later, and they'd change their story. My best guess, he said, is because I think it's really embarrassing for people to talk about that. But Jesus said the whole reason for the mission, for the Christ event, was to give us the opportunity to not experience that. Well, I have a good illustration for you. The most recent funeral that we had, and why Easter is so important. Don Nelson's funeral. So Don sends me a text in December. Don has never texted me in his life. He sends me a text and he says, Pastor, I need to see you up at the hospital. This is Regent Hospital. I go up into the cancer unit. He's sitting in a chair. Some of the family members there, about half of them are crying. And Don says, I have something to tell you. The doctors tell me I have brain cancer and I have a very short period of time to live. Speaking out of my own need, I start saying, hey, Don, it's going to be okay. You know what? We're going to be praying. And Don, he raises his hand. He said, Pastor, this is really bad. But then he says to me, it's going to be okay. Anything that can speak into the horror that is death. The black pit that is death. And allow us to sit there and say, weeks before we are going to give up our spirit, hey, it's going to be okay. We celebrate that. We worship the one who can provide that. We celebrate life on Easter. We don't fear death because of Jesus. Amen.